This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hi, Bill Tabone here, co-founder of the Australian Paranormal Society and author of Ghosts of Airedale Asylum. And you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast. Enjoy.
Welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I'm going to play a show from season 2, one of my most requested episodes, Andy and Johnny. And I'll be back next week with a brand new episode with the Spirit Guides Paranormal Team out of Virginia. So here's my episode of Andy and Johnny. Jimmy and Andy and Johnny, a story by Jimmy Smith, part 1. Jimmy Smith is a decorated Korean War veteran, a true hero in every sense of the word. But on this Philadelphia hot summer night in 1964, Jimmy was battling demons in his head along with Native American Indian music playing in his head as well. Jimmy was not a Native American Indian, nor did he know anything about the Native American Indian, so this was all new to him. Just add this to the million other things that Jimmy was battling in his head. But Jimmy is losing this mental battle. His marriage was falling apart. His kids did not want to be around him. Not because they didn't love him. No, because they lost him. Could not talk to him. Could not do the things that most kids did with their dads. Could not do the things that most wives did with their husbands. Plain and simple, they just lost their dad. Their husband, to something they just didn't have any control over. On top of all of this, the bills were past due. Work was plentiful in Philadelphia, but Jimmy couldn't keep a job. In today's standards, Jimmy would be diagnosed with PTSD. But in 1964, it was called combat fatigue, poor soldier's heart. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. With every drip of water from the spigot down the hall, sounded like a grenade going off in his head.
Drip, drip, drip.
The constant beating of the Native drum and American Indian voice telling Jimmy, just drive west, drive west. But what does that mean? Again, over and over, drive west.
Drip, drip, drip.
With all this going on, battling in his head, a vision of a large body of water kept appearing. So Jimmy decided just to end it all. Drive his Chevrolet across country, straight into the Pacific Ocean. This was strange because the Atlantic Ocean was only a few miles from Philadelphia. So why would he cross country to the Pacific? He figured it would take about 4 or 5 days. Jimmy turned and looked at his wife, who was laying on her side in their bed next to him. Judy's back was facing him. He ran his hand through her hair and whispered, I love you. I'm sorry. Wrote down the same thing on a piece of paper and left it on her nightstand. Jimmy walked down the hallway, paused in front of his daughter's room. Grace was beautiful, looked just like her mother. Beautiful long brown hair, brown eyes. Grace was 7 years old, going on 17. Then Jimmy walked a few steps to his son's room. His son, Jimmy the Fourth, named after himself, grandfather, and great-grandfather. Jimmy the Fourth, who everybody called Junior, was also a splitting image of Jimmy. With tears running down his face, Jimmy just felt useless, so lost. And without speaking a word, he quietly shut the front door behind him. Jimmy started his 1957 Chevrolet, and with that, Jimmy and his taillights disappeared into the hot summer Philadelphia night. Today our story is on Jimmy and Indian Johnny, a story by Jimmy Smith. Jimmy Smith sent me this story about a year ago, and I was tossing it around, like, where would it fit in the paranormal realm of things? And with so many podcasts I've done since the story came in, things led back to Indian myths, culture, great spirits, Indian burial grounds. So I'm thinking, you know, why not? This story is so powerful that I decided to go ahead and put this out. The story is in four parts. You just heard part one. Part two is coming up shortly. But what I want to do is I want to plug a few of the affiliates, sponsors, and other guests who have been on my show, who have books on Amazon. Beth Garcia was on a previous episode. She has a book called Altering Eternity, Short Stories of the Paranormal. You can find this on Amazon, and the links are at the bottom of this podcast. Another great read, To Me With Love, a book written by Tambre Ross. And if you ever want to know what it's like to get into the mind of a psychic medium, the struggles they go through, that's another great read on Amazon, To Me With Love, Tambre Ross. Tambre is a member of the Paranormal Investigations of Oklahoma. Haunted, Clark County, Virginia. That was written by Mike Hess. Mike Hess was also a previous guest on Ghost in the Valley. You can pick up Haunted Clark County, Virginia, also on Amazon. And again, the links are at the bottom of this podcast. Maybe you need a book for your children, for your daycare, for your nieces, nephews. This book is not on the paranormal, so it won't scare the little ones. And this book is special to me because it is written by my niece, Amber Richardson, The Case of the Missing Socks. Have you ever did your laundry and you can't find a missing sock anywhere? I mean, this is great for the children. The Case of the Missing Socks, Amber Richardson, again found on Amazon, and the links are all at the bottom of this podcast. Now let's get back to Jimmy and Indian Johnny by Jimmy Smith, part two. It's been over 36 hours, only stopping to go to the restroom and get gas. But Jimmy was exhausted. He hasn't slept in nearly 2 days since leaving Philadelphia. He could not understand why it was taking so long to get to his final destination. Driving for hours and growing more frustrated, Jimmy's eyes were growing heavier and heavier. He crossed the center line, then he woke up just before he was about to hit a 18-wheeler head-on. He could hear the semi's horn blaring as it went by. Jimmy pulled off the side of the road, shaking from what could have been the end right there. Jimmy was thinking to himself, so why didn't God just take him out right there? Why didn't that Native American Indian's voice that was still in his head end it right there? What was so important about driving west? What is so great about that large body of water? Again, with everything running through his head, Jimmy turned the car off, leaned his head back, and gazed at the beautiful stars in the sky. Jimmy never seen the stars so bright. It looked like diamonds sparkling on a pitch black background. Just like that, the diamonds faded away as Jimmy went into a deep slumber. Jimmy is waking up. His eyes are sore and red, and his neck hurts from the position he was sitting in and sleeping in all night. It felt like he slept a whole week. This was the first time the pounding in Jimmy's head stopped. The noonday sun was very bright. It actually hurt his eyes as he was trying to adjust to his surroundings. he could see that he pulled off the side of the road and parked right next in front of a sign that read, "Welcome to Rosebud." Rosebud was a small town and an Indian village and reservation in South Dakota, home of the Rosebud Sioux tribe, a branch of the Lakota Indian. Then Jimmy's eyes focused on what looked like an Indian's gift shop just about 100 yards in front of him. The faded sign on top of the store read, "Screaming Eagle." There were tumbleweeds blowing everywhere, looked very deserted. But then Jimmy noticed a very old Indian man sitting on the front porch. Looked like he was whittling something, wood shavings flying everywhere, as his old wrinkled hands carved away. Jimmy didn't bring any food or drink with him. Jimmy's money was scarce, so mainly he just had enough money to get to the West Coast, get him to the Pacific Ocean, get him to the end of his final journey. Jimmy got out of his car, walked up on the front porch of the Screaming Eagle, looked at the old Indian out of the corner of his eye, and the Indian was very concentrated on his work. The Indian was very, very old. Jimmy walked past the old man and into the store. Looked very rustic and antique. Indian artifacts everywhere, but Jimmy's only concern is getting something to eat and drink. Upon approaching the counter, he noticed the only thing on the wall menu was Coca-Cola and a ham sandwich. Even stranger were the two women behind the counter. They looked like they were Native American Indian, but they also looked albino. Not dark complected, as he would suspect a Native American woman would look. This to him was very strange. They seen him looking at the wall menu, and before he could speak a word, they had a sandwich and a bottle of Coke on the counter for him. Jimmy was reaching into his pocket to pay when both women put their hands out in a stopped motion, shaking their heads no. They just stood there and stared at him like they knew him forever, like they knew his problems, like they knew his pain. No words were spoken. Jimmy nodded his head and walked out. There were empty chairs on the front porch next to the old Indian, who was still whittling this piece of wood. Jimmy sat down, eating his sandwich and watching the old man. Finally, he asked, "What are you making?" The old Indian looked up and smiled, and he held up a beautiful carved owl. The old man finally spoke, "Different tribes see the owl in different ways. This owl is the owl of death. There is a dark cloud around you. The Great Spirit took over my hands. I didn't know what I was making until you arrived. Now I know a spirit of darkness is with you." The old Indian said, "Let me introduce myself. You can call me Johnny." Jimmy's thinking to himself, "I'll just call him Indian Johnny." The old man looked at Jimmy and said, "Indian Johnny is fine." Jimmy was flabbergasted. How could he know what Jimmy was thinking? Jimmy went to drink his bottle of Coca-Cola when Indian Johnny yelled, "Stop!" This startled Jimmy. Indian Johnny took the bottle of Coke and poured it into an old tin cup sitting next to him. Then Johnny took an old wooden spoon out of his pocket, lifted the Coke out of the tin cup with that wooden spoon, each time going higher and higher and letting the liquid of the Coke fall back into the tin cup. Jimmy asked, "What are you doing?" Indian Johnny said, "I am removing all the evil spirits out of the liquid. You need no more evil in your life. The Great Spirit oversees all spirits. The Great Spirit alone will remove the evil spirits from every living thing." Jimmy said with a mocking tone, "I don't see how Coca-Cola is being a living thing." Indian Johnny handed the tin cup back to Jimmy and said, "Drink. Drink." As Jimmy was drinking his Coke, he noticed it was ice cold. It was warm when he first got it, How was this possible? Indian Johnny said, "You see, the water used in making this drink comes from the Great Spirit. That's why we honor every living creature, plant, and smoke the pipe." With that, Indian Johnny placed the carved owl on an old table next to his chair. He stood up and said, "Come with me." With that, Indian Johnny and Jimmy walked behind the store to what looked like an Indian reservation. Many tents, men, women, and children. They were circled around a fire that was burning in the center, all sitting on the ground. Indian Johnny mentioned for Jimmy to sit. Jimmy thinks Indian Johnny must be an Indian chief or great warrior because every Indian there looked at Johnny as if he was a god. Indian Johnny lit a huge wooden pipe. It is then passed around in the circle. After doing this for more than an hour, Johnny raised his hand and everybody around that circle grew silent. Indian Johnny spoke in the native Lakota Sioux language, but for some reason, Jimmy could understand every single word that Johnny said. "Wakam Tonka has sent us a gift. This man is a great warrior who has fought many battles like myself. This great warrior will not lose this battle." Indian Johnny stood up, threw the beautiful owl that he had carved earlier into the fire. Jimmy felt like he was floating above the circle. The flames of the fire were below him, and these flames were growing higher and higher. Jimmy felt like he could touch the night sky, for it was night again, and the diamonds were out in full force, glorious and beautiful. And just like that, it was over. Jimmy woke up on the ground. It was daylight. The only thing Jimmy could hear was the wind blowing, tumbleweeds rolling across the field. Everything was gone. All the people, the fire, the tents, and the Indians, and Indian Johnny. Jimmy raised himself up from the ground, brushed himself off, walked around to the front of the store, walked up on the front porch of the Screaming Eagle. No Indian Johnny sitting there whittling. No albino Indians. The door was locked. Jimmy made his way back to his car. On the hood of his car was a brown paper bag. Inside the bag was a ham sandwich and a bottle of Coca-Cola. And even though it seemed like 100 degrees outside, the Coca-Cola, again, was ice cold. When he got into his Chevrolet, he felt different. He felt like he was reborn. He felt new. With that, Jimmy started his car and headed on his journey to the ocean. This time, to the Atlantic Ocean. This time, to Philadelphia. And this time, home. We'll be right back with part 3 of Jimmy and Indian Johnny. The sun was just starting to peak over the horizon as Jimmy crossed the Pennsylvania state line. Jimmy is very, very sleepy, but nothing is stopping him now. He has to get home. The thoughts of him driving to the ocean and taking his life were now replaced with the faces of Judy, Grace, and JR. Jimmy prayed that his family would forgive him. As he turned onto Walnut Street, which is in the south side of Philadelphia, he could see the small Cape Cod home and now was getting very nervous. Would they forgive him? Would they let him back in, back into their lives? But before Jimmy could get the keys out of his ignition, the whole family was running towards him with open arms and with open hearts. They were crying with joy as they wrapped their arms around him. And as they walked back towards the front door, Jimmy knew once again that this was a new beginning. pounding in Jimmy's head had stopped. No more Native American music. No more beating of the drums. No more Indian Johnny. No more demons and no more chaos. Jimmy was back. Back to the man Judy had married, and for the next 20 years, they led a very productive and joyful life. Judy worked as a paralegal, while Jimmy worked his way up the corporate ladder. It's now 1984. Grace is 27 years old, married, and is with child. JR, he's single and trying to find his own way. In a lot of ways, JR is a lot like his dad. Every Thanksgiving feast featured the same story every year, and the story was Indian Johnny. They knew the story so well, every person in the family could recite it word for word. But to Judy, whatever happened on that night back in 1964 was nothing short of a miracle, because to her, Jimmy was happy. But most of all, and most important, Jimmy was alive. It's now 1994. Jimmy is diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. He has been given less than a year to live. While one evening, sitting on the front porch swing with Judy, he says, "I want to take you there." Judy says, "You want to take me where?" "You know, back to the Rosebud Indian Reservation. Back to Indian Johnny. I want to take you there." Judy was so stunned by this comment, she didn't know what to say. So she said nothing. 4 days went by, and that evening, while lying in bed, Judy said, "You know, Jimmy, that was 30 years ago. Indian Johnny has to be dead by now, and it will not be the same." Jimmy looked at Judy and says, "I know you never believe me, and that's okay. Before I go, I want to take you there. I want to share what happened to me. I want to share it with you." How could she say no? The next day, the car was packed, and they were on their road trip to the Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Took a couple days, but they finally arrived. Jimmy pulled off to the side of the road, the same spot that he did 30 years ago. Judy looked out her side window and seen the old rusted sign that said, "Welcome to Rosebud." The same sign that Jimmy had talked about for 30 years. And the sign was rusted and faded. Jimmy and Judy got out of the car, and Jimmy says, "Please wait here. Let me go up to make sure it's safe." Jimmy walked to the Screaming Eagle, and it looked like it was all boarded up. Nobody there. So he walked around back. There were the tents, and there was a smoldering fire. After standing back there for a few minutes, Jimmy walked back around front, gave a final look at the Screaming Eagle gift shop, and walked back towards Judy. Jimmy was excited, but at the same time very sad, because the store was closed, and nobody was there. Judy finally said, "Jimmy, I'm so glad we got to share this together, and it definitely was not a wasted trip." She told Jimmy how much she loved him and got back into the car. As they were driving off, Judy looked in her side mirror and she could see the sign fading in the background, "Welcome to Rosebud." But there was no Indian Johnny. There were no albino Indians, and there was no Screaming Eagle. There was nothing there but tumbleweed. She didn't have the heart to tell Jimmy there was nothing there. But Jimmy was so excited, she couldn't do this to him. She loved the man he had become. And if this nothing that she's looking at turned him back into the man she knew, the man she loved, then she was happy. But Jimmy looked at Judy and says, "Why are you crying?" She couldn't tell Jimmy this was all in your imagination. She couldn't tell him maybe this was just a dream. When you pulled off the side of the road, you just dreamt the whole thing. She couldn't say any of that. All she could say is, "I'm so happy that we could share this together." After returning home, not a word was said to the kids that they went to the Rosebud Reservation. All they knew was they went on a short vacation out west. That's all the family were told. Jimmy passed away a few months after that. the next Thanksgiving dinner, JR said, "Thank God we don't have to go through another Jimmy and Indian Johnny story." His mother, Judy, slammed her hands down on the table, says, "Don't you dare, don't you dare. We will continue this tradition until we breathe our last breath. Do you understand me?" Not a word was spoken. They all shook their head. Yes. We will return of Jimmy and Indian Johnny after these messages. And now for part 4 of Jimmy and Indian Johnny. It's now 2014. Judy has been gone a couple years now. The family all kind of went on their own way. Grace is the only one with a complete family now. Grace and her husband Jeffrey have 4 children, 3 boys and a daughter. JR never married. JR has spiraled straight downhill, just like his dad. Complete depression that resulted in a suicide attempt right after his mother Judy passed away. It's Christmas Eve, 2014. Grace gets a call from Chester County Hospital, Philadelphia. The nurse asks Grace if she was related to Jimmy Randolph Smith, otherwise known as JR. She said, "Yes, he's my brother." The nurse said, "You may want to get here right away." Grace asked, "Is my brother okay?" The nurse said again, "Ma'am, he may want to get here right away." Grace now lived in Pittsburgh, which is over a 4-hour drive from Philadelphia. Grace had very little contact with her brother since her mom passed away. Grace and Jeffrey packed a small bag and headed to Philly. This isn't the way Grace wanted to spend her Christmas, but she loved her brother and she had to be by his side. JR had severe depression, or was it PTSD, or was it bipolar? She wasn't quite sure, but she knew it was really bad. Grace and Jeffrey were met by the on-call hospital doctor. She said that JR was in the ICU if you wanted to see him. Grace went in by herself. JR this time wasn't going to pull through. The heart monitor was so loud, the hospital staff ran in, tried to resuscitate him. They tried over and over, but Jimmy was gone. They let Grace have a moment with JR on her own on this cold, snowy Christmas day. It just turned Christmas. His time of death was called at 12:01 a.m. As the hospital staff was preparing JR's body to be transferred to the morgue, Grace collapsed in the hallway in Jeffrey's arms. She cried out, "My whole family is gone now." Jeffrey said, "You still have me and the kids. I'm so sorry, Gracie. I'm so sorry." Jimmy Randolph Smith, a.k.a. JR, sees a bright light. Then, a Native American Indian voice says, "Wakon Tonka." Was this the voice that Dad heard at the Rosebud Reservation? Was this Indian Johnny? Then the voice said, "Look in the glove compartment of your dad's car. It's a brown paper bag. Before your dad began his journey home, a small token of our appreciation to your father, I gave him a sandwich, a soda, and a gift that now will remain in your family for years to come." That's funny because his dad always mentioned the sandwich and the Coca-Cola, but never a gift. A nurse's voice said, "Call Dr. Cindy. This man is not dead." The bright light turned into a small flashlight the nurse was shining into his eyes. JR said, "Am I okay?" Dr. Cindy said, "This is impossible. He's been gone for over 15 minutes. But JR was back, answering every question that the doctor was throwing at him. They ran down and got Grace and Jeffrey as they were exiting and told them the great news, the miracle. It's now Thanksgiving 2018 at JR's house, the same house that his dad and his mother owned on Walnut Street, the house he and his sister grew up in. Around the table sat Grace, her husband, their 3 boys and daughter, and JR. JR stood up, walked to the end of the table where Grace was sitting. She stood up next to JR, and they said, "We are carrying on the tradition of Jimmy and Indian Johnny. The story must be told." Grace's daughter asked, "But who's going to tell the story?" At that moment, Jimmy, not Jimmy the Fifth, just Jimmy, Grace's oldest son, who is now almost 20 years old, said, "I am Uncle JR." Well, that was the end of the story that was sent to me. That was sent to me over almost a year ago. And the story was sent to me by Grace's son, Jimmy. And I contacted Jimmy to let him know when the release date for this episode would be. And he thanked me, but he said he had an update to the story. So I'm going to include the update right now. He said, "My dad, JR, passed away since I sent you this story. And I now live in the same house that my dad did and that my grandparents, Jimmy and Judy, lived in on Walnut Street right here in Philadelphia. Still here, same house." He went on to tell me that while he was cleaning out the house and making it his own, he decided he was going to get rid of that 1957 Chevy still sitting in the garage with a blanket over it. As he was cleaning out the car, he came across a brown bag in the glove compartment. He thought that was strange that there would just be a kind of a wrinkled up brown bag in the glove compartment. So he went through the bag and he found a ring. On the one side of the ring was an eagle. On the other side of the ring was a teepee. But what was most intriguing was inside the ring, what was etched inside the ring was J and J. Now, was this Jimmy and Judy, or did this mean Jimmy and Johnny, Indian Johnny? So he went to get the ring out of the bag to get a better look at it, and all of a sudden, he had the same voice in his head that he assumed his dad and his granddad had before him. And that voice said, "Wakon Tonka." But with the voice also came the images of his father, JR, and his grandparents, Jimmy and Judy, sitting with Indian Johnny around a campfire. And he knew everything was all right. He felt and seen this while holding the ring. He put the ring back in the brown paper bag, back in the glove compartment, and covered up the 1957 Chevy. The Chevy was no longer for sale in Philadelphia.